Hey, Jesse.
Good.
Hi.
Actually, thanks. And we're going to
be done with Christmas before.
You did.
Hey there.
Okay, we're really close to actually finding it. Take a dumb David Auburn book.
Okay.
It's entirely going to be about you, the good one.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
So I can't really get it done without you there. Take that grant.
And we would love to actually, I mean, the funds I don't get, but I probably have another zero program.
Yeah,
I'm going to be fine.
I know.
It's going to be
so good. So we're getting a grant plus on how long
the money. Yeah, the grant plus is going to be two. But we need a separate city
agreement.
Yeah. We need them to say they won't bribe any federal officials.
Right.
And have bribe.
Okay.
They won't spend any money on
it. You're still open.
Yeah.
But,
hey,
yeah.
Any
judgment
for the
Yeah.
They're working
agency. Oh, hey. Good job. How are you? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Brad. Welcome to our meeting.
Here
we go. Welcome.
Welcome.
Good
to
see you. How are you? Good to see you too.
Kind of that far away from the whole
yeah, thing. That's right. That's
right. Found me alone.
Nice to see you.
Likewise. Good to come out and
sit on. Hey. Can you see about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What's that word?
It's not a good thing.
Right. No, it's just, all right. Yeah, there's not enough money there. Back here.
We're going back in the future. How much does it work?
Yeah,
sure. I'm worried about it. 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 I'm worried about it.
I'm worried about it. I'm worried about it. I'm worried about it. I'm worried about it.
I don't know where I got it. I discovered my call sign was around. under COVID, so.
I don't know if you saw, Tom, we have quite a few public comments that came in, emailed, and so Ted has printed them out as well.
If they were emails within the last 2 hours,
I think we're usually emailing around 6.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of man to do.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a backstory. That's what always is.
I mean, wouldn't many of these people qualify for therapy?
Yeah. Well,
but not all.
But not all.
Mr. Candela, still distributing the Bibles?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, weren't you distributing Bibles?
All the Bibles.
Yeah. You know, on my vacation, I'm doing good. And look, you go to the motel.
Yeah,
probably from April 2020, the service of all of us in Woodland is being really bad. From one day to the other, they discontinued 2 lines, 210 and 214. And they basically every 6 months, different persons, first Jose Perez, I think, after 2 years, another gentleman, I don't know his last name, his name is Rick, oh no, Eric, and today I found out he's not here anymore. They say the suspension will be temporary, because they want to implement the service and make it better. Nothing happened. Several times they did the work, never fulfilled, of these substitute tooth lines with a micro transit service. Nobody explained what it was. And they give it the time, they say like the affordable health care, you will need to do it that you will find out what is there. So we need to find out nothing. In the meantime, they discontinue the line, even from the Yolo Special, to cities like Zamora, Dunningham, our several. So it's impossible to access to Dunningham and Zamora anymore, even with the Yolo Special. The last promise, no, the two last promise, they were in January 1st, 2023. Michael Transit will be in service. Nothing happened.
I'll give you a
notice. Mr.
If you got about 40 seconds more, okay?
I'll give you a few more because...
Actually, you've already done it 3 days. So we give it all. I'll give you a minute, okay, sir?
In February 2023, they said for sure May the 1st, a few days ago, microtransit would be in service. Nothing happened. Actually, the gentleman who provided this work, he was I don't remember his name. So I wonder what happened with the service of Dorobas, who is support the city of Woodland.
All right, sir. That's your 4 minutes. Let us get a chance to respond to you tonight, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, thank you. If you'd like to move back from the microphone, I'm going to turn it over to Autumn to explain some of our supply chain issues and other factors which were beyond our control. Autumn Bernstein, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Condello, for the comments. You're absolutely right that the microtransit service has not launched as soon as any of us had hoped. We do have an agenda item tonight to look at the service plan for the Woodland service. Some of the responsibility for the delays on our end, we have had some staff turnover. You're absolutely right, and you remembered both Jose and Eric's names correctly, and neither of them are with us anymore. We do have a great staff who are working very hard to get this done and to launch the service as soon as possible. And just for board members' context, we did discontinue 2 of the 4 Woodland local lines when we did the YOLO Go or comprehensive operations assessment, with the understanding that those two lines would be replaced by microtransit, but it has been a several year gap since those lines were discontinued and the microtransit is not here yet. So the service is definitely, I think the folks in Woodland have, as Mr. Kendall explained, have experienced that lack of service. At this point, the major delay on the microtransit service is the vehicle. It's the supply chain issues with purchasing vehicles have been very challenging. At this point, we believe we will have 4 of the 8 vehicles that we have ordered at the end of June or early July. It was originally supposed to be January, of course, then the other 4 vehicles, we don't even have a date for those at this point. So it is a very challenging time to try to launch it. We do not, with the fleet that we have, we simply do not have the fleet to launch the service without the new vehicle. So that is a major challenge. We do also have issues with having enough drivers, but as my friend, our general manager, Michael Klein, will tell you, they are doing everything in their power to make sure that we have sufficient drivers to launch the service. At this point, our hope is August 1st. But again, that really depends on us getting delivery of at least 4 of the vehicles. And it may end up being actually a partial launch if we don't have sufficient vehicles to launch it to the full level that we would like to.
Mr. Chair, are you able to ask questions or?
Well, you know, it isn't actually agenda as now, but it's on our agenda later. So in that event, I think we can discuss it at this time.
Mr. Chair, I can wait till we. So it's on our agenda and the time part of this.
Right. When we do that, we'll have further discussion on this issue as we proceed with our agenda. All right? That's a little more business-like anyway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I think I can just say we share your frustrations. You can't, love or money won't get those vehicles here any faster than the supply chain makes it possible. All right, let's move on to the consent calendar. This is item 3A through 3C. Is there any item on the consent calendar that any board member wishes to remove for discussion?
I'm happy to move the consent calendar. Submitted.
Right, we have a motion.
Early seconds.
I presume there's no public comment on the consent calendar. There being none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The consent calendar is adopted. Moving on to the regular calendar, this is items 4 through 9. Item 4 is administrative reports, discussion regarding subjects not specifically presented to clarify questions. Okay? Board members, anyone who remember how to report, they wish to share tonight?
Autumn, I think you were going to share our subcommittee meeting, or should I? Hello. Okay, perfect.
Okay, then. Transdev, what's the good news? So many drivers, you can't have enough buses anymore.
That would just be great. We're working on it hard. We actually we're doing individual interviews along with, we have a job fair set up for, it's on the 24th of this month, and we've got together with GoWorks for next month to do a job fair with them. There's hopefully like six in
front of. We should probably borrow that mic for you because you will not reproduce on the recording of the meeting unless you're speaking into a microphone.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've partnered up with GoWorks. They actually reached out to us. We reached out to them about a year ago, and we didn't hear anything for a while. Unfortunately, they reached back to us. It's going to work out well. We're subject to that. And along with that, we didn't have any applications. It went stale for a couple weeks. And then all of a sudden, over the weekend, I had 20 applications.
Whoa.
So it's kind of nice. So we're getting through setting up individual applications because we don't want to wait till the drop there, of course, for them to show up. But we're looking forward to getting them in. A lot of them are still setting up, interviews, but then they don't show up. But that's why we're still trying to do what we can in between, hoping for the job fair to be successful. And then I know Julie said we're looking for 68. I'm actually looking for a higher number than that so we can have more of a standby for emergencies.
68 new drivers?
No, 68 total.
Okay.
So additional 8 from where we are.
Thank you. Are we losing experienced drivers?
Not experienced drivers, no. The real turnover we've had, we've lost one experience with us in County State. As far as that, the only turnover has been due to new hires. Just new training, get license, go somewhere else, or something comes up. But otherwise, a few of our experienced operators have moved into dispatch under road service. So we're retaining all our experienced drivers.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that takes us to the Executive Director's verbal report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did send out an Executive Director's report on Friday with lots of good photos from a bunch of events we did. So last weekend, there were 5 different events I think we participated in. And so take a look at that if you want to see some good photos. So I won't put anything that's there. I did want to mention you have in front of you, you have a packet and you also have some public comment that we received. We did receive a number of public comments from people in the City of Davis. Talking about the desire to bring microtransit to the City of Davis. So I just wanted to flag that. I think part of what this, why this has come up now, you know, we've been working with Caltrans on the environmental impact report for the Yolo Lady project. And one of the things they did in terms of looking at their mitigation strategy for induced travel, they reached out to a bunch of jurisdictions in Yolo County and asked for ideas. And the City of Davis responded with the idea that you could launch microtransit in the City of Davis, and that would be a way to reduce CMT. So that didn't come from us. It came from the City of Davis. But Caltrans liked that idea, and they ran it through their models, and it is included in the draft EIR for them to put some money for us slash them to put some of our mitigation money towards a potential pilot microtransit program. So I think the word has gotten out in the City of Davis, and that might be a catalyst for where these comments are coming from. So I just want to flag that. Happy to answer any questions on it. On the Yolo 80 project, we did have a meeting of our ad hoc committee where we kind of gave an update on some of the work that's happening in terms of our conversations with partners at the regional level, working with SACOG, the other county transportation agencies within SACOG and Caltrans about the idea of setting up a tolling authority. Those conversations are going really well, and I would say there's actually strong support for putting together some sort of a drug powers authority to manage tolling initially in Yolo County and then bringing in the other counties as tolling comes online there. So Kirk Trost, who's our consulting attorney on that, has had one-on-one conversations with each of the principals around the region now, and is preparing actually a draft framework, like a bare-bones framework for what a JSA could be, and we'll be bringing that to the ad hoc committee to discuss. As well, we had that great news from SACOG last week. They have funded our tolling advanced planning project. We asked for $3 million, $2 million of which is for us and $1 million for Caltrans. But the $2 million will allow us to do all the tolling advanced planning work that's needed to apply for a tolling authority and move tolling forward. Welcome, Director Lauren. And then there's $1 million for Caltrans for design work on this project. So that's great news and will allow us to continue to move this forward. The last thing I will note is that there is the Institute of Transportation at UC Davis is holding their second annual Transit Research Symposium this Wednesday. It's an all-day event. It's free. It's open to the public. And I've been invited to lead a discussion on microtransit, a breakout session on microtransit. So I will be there as well as some of our staff, and I'm happy to share details with any members of the board or public who are interested in that. And with that concludes my report.
I might ask a question. First of all, I've already expressed privately, since my colleagues and I left, the tremendous relief we all feel that the situation in Davis involving the NYPERC was resolved, well, hopefully with an arrest. And I sort of wondered, was there any impact for our buses while this was going on?
That's a question Mike might be able to answer. I can't say that I know.
It just seems like there were so many implications from this event. The university canceling all, or doing all night classes by Zoom, for example.
Well, as far as our operators, they were concerned, there was more on, they were on the lookout. So there was a lot of calls saying that they had seen someone that matched the description. But as far as more of fear, I was surprised there wasn't, but we did reach out and let our operators know that if they didn't feel comfortable, to let us know.
Well, please tell your drivers they have the appreciation of this board for staying with us through that unfortunate time. Would you do that?
Will do.
Thanks.
That was very nice as far as WXP staff, frankly, checking in to see if there was any concerns and remind us to let them know if we had to adjust timing for everybody to dive out or anything else. Nice for the support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bottom of all that. All right. Then that brings us over to the receive the E.D. Mendes-Lane's monthly report.
Yeah, and I kind of talked about this already in my report, but I'll see if the director early has anything she'd want to add from that meeting.
I think the main thing that we talked about was just gearing up for community engagement and what that might look like for all of us. And then also, when we say community engagement, what exactly do we mean? Is it that we are wanting to go out to receive information from the community, or are we actually wanting to go out to provide education around what this is? I think what we settled on in our subcommittee is a lot of our initial community engagement is actually going to be an education campaign regarding what it is, what we're hopeful, the purpose, and even kind of what the impact will be on the community. And so that was a majority of what we actually talked about. And then we learned a lot about risk. and as potential hot topics, red flags, areas come up related to risk. Our staff will educate us, and then we, on the subcommittee, will make recommendations regarding that and what's acceptable risk.
Are we watching the experience in Solano County and what they're doing?
So far, we have not discussed it, but that is absolutely something that I think our team could and they already be doing.
Mr. Chair, great question. We are very much talking with our counterparts there. In fact, Brian and I are scheduled to go down and meet them in person at their office next week. A key issue I think where the agencies need to collaborate is I would like to, one is that their project goes basically from the Cartinas Bridge to Vacaville to 505. Our project goes from UC Davis East. There's going to be a gap. They're basically between Vacaville and the county line. And so they are actually, it's on their side of the line, but it impacts us very much. So, you know, they don't really have a lot of population centers to the east. Really, Dixon is the only place that's impacted, but it will be very impactful for us in terms of the bottleneck that we are working to address with this project, to kind of shift westward, if you will. So they are, we're talking about kind of co-collaborating to initiate a study of that section of the freeway. To look at what potential options are. So that's one issue. And then the second issue that we're talking about is express bus service on the corridor and long distance bus service. You know, we have our Causeway connection and of course our Route 42. They have some bus service on their side that connects them from the Bay Area through Solano County. But there's not a lot of great connections across the county flying. So we're talking about ways in which once we have express lanes, we can leverage those to have better transit service and corridors.
The reason I asked the question in part is because for the driving public to go through one express lane situation and a few miles later into another, they should be as similar as possible. I've driven in other parts of the state and they have all sorts of different things going on. From, you know, lanes you can't move out of or even sometimes raise things to the electronic signs overhead. It's hard to read it all and understand what it's all about, and it's just different. I think it's going to be confusing to the motoring public, so I think we should try to have some kind of consensus between the two counties for what we're going to be doing.
And if I may, just to quickly respond, Solano is part of the MTC, what's called BAFA, the Bay Area Infrastructure Finance Authority, so they actually set the rules for how tolling will operate there. And we have also been in touch with folks at BAFA about, so they'll be establishing a toll policy for that special corridor. And of course, Solano County will be very involved, but ultimately it's the BAFA board of directors who gets to decide. So we have been in conversation with them and they've committed to keeping us involved as they are actually developing their policy for that stretch. And we'll do the same on our side.
I presume it's foreseeable at some point in time we would fill in that gap. If you look, oftentimes, for whatever reason, congestion forms between Vacaville and Davis. I don't know why, but it does, and we've all been through it.
Fewer lanes, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that did have an impact.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the report. Okay, long-range calendar.
Yes, and we do have a slide on this. So just wanted to highlight a couple things. You have a number of items tonight that are preliminary for discussion only that are all coming back for approval next month. So it's going to look a little bit like Groundhog Day here in June when we're going to be approving some of the items we're talking about tonight. And then in July, we're going to be bringing you an overdue progress report on our annual goals. And then we will have the draft environmental impact report for Yolo 80 at that point. It's supposed to be released in late June, so we'll be giving you a presentation on what that EIR says, and also hopefully a kickoff on the Yolo Active Transportation Corridors project. You know, this is a project that we've been ready to get going with for about 9 months at this point, but we're waiting on FHWA to finalize the paperwork. And then in September, we hope to come back to you with our Woodland Transit Center study that you approved at last month's board meeting. A capital improvement plan. We don't have a 10-year capital improvement plan, and it's in our work plan to make that happen, so we know exactly what our outstanding capital needs are. And then a report and possible action on a salary survey to look at our compensation and make sure we understand where we are relative to other agencies, that there's been so much change in the labor environment over the last few years. And then it's also that will be my second anniversary. So my annual performance review is
2 years.
Thank
you. Any questions on the long-range calendar? All right, thank you for that. And now we want to receive the technical advisory committee meeting minutes. They're around here. Any questions on them? No? All right. Then the Citizens Advisory Committee meeting minutes. Any questions or comments on them? All right, that concludes our...
So less questions and more just flagging that I know board members, is that what they're called here? Counselors? Directors. I know Director Warren and myself need to meet to discuss diversity, equity, and inclusion for our committee. And so that is a conversation that we've had with Autumn, and hopefully we will be scheduling that meeting to review in the next couple of weeks. So I want to make sure that hasn't gone off our radar.
Thank you. All right. So item 5 on our agenda is the update to the district-wide micro transit policies.
All right, good evening. So to provide a little bit of background before I got here, YOLO YTD staff were currently working on since October 22nd, a motion to approve the promotional fare of $1 for night landing for microtransit. During that time, it was always written within, but maybe not implemented, that the fare would go to $4. As the full cost for that service. Then, continuing on at the beginning of January 2023, as part of our broader efforts to now implement new microtransit service for the city of Woodland, as well as the need to, and we're going to be going with RideCo as our software platform that will be kind of handling the operational aspect of this, it was required that we also update our microtransit policies. So with that, this presentation really is specifically going to go over the key elements of what have been updated. But below, I've listed just to read them out for you all that there have been 12 sections in total that have been updated within this policy document regarding eligibility, which eliminates the residency requirement in addition to prior that microtransit your ride riders had to fill out have like 8 pieces of documentation that are then verified with the new ride code service. Everyone is eligible. And essentially, as well, how it goes, that they would register either for downloading the app, or for those that are not able to use the app, they can call in, and then we'll record their information and I'll be uploaded within the RideCo system. So regardless of if they are app accessible or not, as long as they're able to call in and have internet connection, they're eligible to use the service. We've also changed our identification requirements, specifically meaning that with some of the different fare structures we have with microtransit, drivers have the option to ask a rider to show their ID, but it is not a requirement to use the service in the sense that every time they book a trip, they're not going to be asked or required to show their ID. Mm-hmm. It's just to have that option. Reservation policy, which I'll kind of touch on a little bit. Personal belongings, hours of service, zone maps, acceptable fares and acceptable forms, which I'll have up here in a second. Rules for non-service animals. Cancellations, no-shows reimbursement, suspension of service, and then penalties for disorderly conduct. We shrunk in the previous policy document, and I think it explains in much further detail just the expectations that the rider should have when using our microtransit service, how to use it, and then just some rules and guidelines. And so with that, going on to the big change that we have now is that one-way fares are now, what we have proposed for this microtransit policy is $3 from what was current, was previously $4. In addition to that, youth and senior disabled fares are $150, and then group passes can receive a 50% discount when ordering for groups between 5 to 8. In addition, with the reservation policy, now riders have the ability to book their trip up to 7 days in advance using the RideCo app or through calling in. And so, touching on these big items right here, before the fares were just $3 to $4 across the board. So with that, we thought that if by responding to the one-way fare for reducing that from 4 to 3, but also having options for youth and seniors, that we were trying to respond to kind of the different needs of the different types of riders that have used the service. And so, are there any questions from anyone that has that procedure?
Dr. Ray.
Yes, so I just, I will reflect back to make sure I am keeping up. And so initially our fares were $2, right? All right? They were $1.
The promotional fare was $1.
I really, I appreciate your emphasis. How long is that promotional okay. I mean, as long as we're calling it out.
No, right. It was supposed to be 4 years, but I believe it went on kind of for more than two.
Three. Okay. So our promotional fare, which lasts for 3 years, thanks for promotion.
Yeah.
So it went from $1 to right now, currently it's $4, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And what right now the YOLO TD staff are proposing is that we would take it to $3 per ride.
Correct. Or one way.
Okay.
But then also, depending on if they're youth, senior, disabled, it'll be $150. So different tiers would also have a further reduction for their one-way trip.
I would just flag less question, more commentary, that what we heard from our public around this, particularly from Knight Landing and potentially even Winter, Senator Warren, you can share on whether there were any residents from there, that the jump from 1 to 4 was significant, and not all of the individuals who came and testified or gave public comment were seniors. And so I would guess that even $3 is going to still continue to feel pretty significant when you are talking about maybe minimum wage and needing to use this as transportation. And so I do have some ideas on this. I don't know if I should let you finish your presentation or throw those out now, Chair.
I can throw them out now.
Okay. Potentially what we could do for individuals who do not have access to fixed rides like our buses in Winters and Knight Landing is have the fare be actually $2 a ride, and that would still have it hopefully be more reasonable for those individuals who, especially aren't seniors, but then would it de-incentivize folks, potentially in Woodland, from using fixed rides? That is what I would propose as a discussion point.
All right. Well, glad that we've laid it on the table at this stage, but right now I'll continue with the presentation and then we'll talk about options going forward. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. No, that sounds good. So I think we can go to the next slide. And so kind of as I said previously, so the sections for the entire policy document, these are each section that is covered in terms of changes that have occurred. I've already kind of gone over eligibility and ID requirements and the reservation for policy. Hours of service have not currently changed at this point, but just as a reminder of how they were before is that Knight Landing from Monday through Friday operated 8 to 5. From Winters, that is from 8 to 4 p.m. On Saturday, there's no service currently for Knight Landing. And then Sunday, it operates from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. On Winters, for Saturday, service from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then on Sunday, it currently doesn't operate service. As I go and discuss item 7 regarding the Woodland service proposal that we have for microtransit, I'll include the times that are listed for the three microtransit options that we have. And so for now, with this policy document, the Woodland times are not included since it is a separate document in terms of what we'll be discussing. And because we just didn't want to have overlapping time assumption before
a final decision was made.
And you're not proposing right now to change the time or days for as a policy, right?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Are you done with the presentation? Just want to go over these last few items. So okay. For hours of service, I covered that. The zone maps have not changed, but they're also included in the package. For the fares, I've gone over that along with the comments requested for incorporating for winters and night landing. For non-service animals, they will not be allowed on the for transit service at this time. And then for cancellations and no-shows, if the rider is using the RideCo app, then that will be, they'll essentially be charged through ride credits. And so that is a way of handling the payments within the app. And that's just kind of the new feature that we have since with your ride, we weren't handling online, Visa card payments for booking a fare trip. And so, let's see, for cancellations, cover that. For reimbursements, cover that with ride credits. For suspension of service, we now have, they'll get a receive a warning, and then after three warnings, there's another three tiers for suspension. And essentially the first suspension will be, it goes in 2-week increments, but we are not at this time having a policy in place to permanently suspend a rider. It's really for, that would lead into disorderly conduct, so if they're doing things that are detrimental to impacting drivers or other riders, we just have that written in as something that is enforceable. But in terms of the policy changes, these were some changes that were already included in the previous Your Ride that have just kind of been really streamlined for the update for the D-Line microtransit service that we get ready to launch. And so for that, I believe that it's the last slide I have, Heather.
Director Lauren had it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. First of all, thank you so much for your work on this. I'm very excited about RideCo, and who doesn't like your direct policy? But my comments are more along the lines of power of service and the cost of the service. So we went from $1, whatever we call it, to $4. So it means that people that are coming out to winners, they don't have any other choice of transportation, and they're paying $8 to do a round trip. And by moving it to three, it's only moving it to six, where they can't get on a different fixed service because that's not available. And the hours are seriously reduced compared to, say, what's in the item for Woodland. That begins at 7 a.m. and it goes until 11 p.m. And on Saturdays it's 10 to 6, so we're offering them a service, but it is a limited service comparatively. But to me, I think $2 is an appropriate cost for the service, and I would agree with Director Early on that. And then the other one is that when the people from that plan came in, one of their items was that they really wanted Saturday service, and when I look at the calendar of the service on Saturday today, it doesn't seem to be any of the districts not provide them Saturday but provide them Sunday. If theirs can be the same as winners and they can have Saturdays, I think we could be informed by ridership, maybe look at their ridership on Sundays and see if there's this, really high ridership, then maybe it's something worth saving. Mm-hmm. But if it isn't, they've asked for Saturday service. And maybe we could provide the Saturday service. And then the other comment was the one-way seniors at 65. It was quite a while back, but we talked about what are the ages, what's youth and what's senior along all different transportation in our area, in Solano County, in Placer, in Staff RT. And it would just be nice if we somehow can make sure that youth is youth and senior is senior, and that it's the same. Like, to me, senior is 60, but we have a 62 policy, and then I think somebody else has a 65 and above policy. But anyway, as an aside, it'd be nice to update that to something that is consistent for all of the transportation in the area. But I'd like to see a discount, but if it's $2 and not $3, I would be okay with just keeping that at the amount. So
asking for Saturday service. And then the other one is if winners can have till 5, just like Night's Landing, I think that would be great so that we have the consistent day and the consistent hour instead of having that hour left for winter. Because people, you know, they still work and they need it. So those would be my comments.
Thank you, Director Lauren. Any others? Members of the board wish to speak?
Could I jump in just real quick on a couple things? I just wanted to clarify. I think Courtney and I confirmed today that even though it said 65 was the age in the policy, that's actually a typo. It should say 62, which is the age that we have for our all other, that's how we define seniors. And then just very quickly on the Winters and Nights Landing service, part of the reason that that is different is it has to do it, and Michael knows this and probably can say it more articulately than I can. It takes longer for the driver to get back here at the end of their shift from Winters than it does from Nights Landing and same thing in the morning. So we have shorter service hours basically so that we don't extend the shift beyond what we're allowed to have it and under our union rules. Am I getting that right, Michael?
You are. Let me add, we've actually adjusted a little bit on that. So we were doing it before we had lunch breaks. So there was a time in between that there was no service. We've actually adjusted that so there's no break in service at all from start to end. And we've actually extended out a little longer. So the service actually ends at the location, you know, in Winters to say, and we do the drive time back after. So before that was included in the travel time, and now that has been changed for several months now.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Chair. Is there a sense, we talk about moving fares around, maybe what, this is best, what the average cost per ride is, or what we're talking about, we're talking about moving $2, I mean, the average cost is, we're losing money by moving fares. So I'm curious to know if there's a sense of what it costs per hour or per ride as we consider these changes or adding services on Saturday where there isn't, what is the impact that we have our budget coming up, what we're looking at.
I have some thoughts.
It sounds
like we have
those people. It's a great question, and it's one I wish I had helped Courtney present as part of this. And so I was actually scribbling back in the envelope as we were talking, because we've been sort of looking at it by hours, which is how we pay for the service,
sure.
But we may have more than one rider and so on. And so based on the projections of the different activities, it looks like it's around the neighborhood of $40 per rider per trip. So it's at the current levels that we're at. Now, as they stand, and one significant piece is also the platform. And so if we have more rides sharing the rides to the platform, that may go down somewhat. I haven't calculated exactly how much of it is for that. And I must say I haven't validated that figure. So that's really a faculty equivalent mm-hmm. figure. But I think that's probably the right kind of magnitude is sort of several tons of dollars per rider.
That's consistent with industry standards. I mean, yeah. I think in the industry, it's $35 to $40 is the average cost per ride for microtransit, as opposed to for fixed route, where it's more variable depending on how densely packed the bus is, right? But you're looking at kind of $8 to $25 sure. a ride, depending on how many people are on the bus. So it's a significant cost, and the fare that the passenger is paying is by no means offsetting a significant amount of the cost.
I think that was, I think, what Director Chapman was really trying to also understand, which is not only the average, right, but what would really be the difference in the dollar change.
So in terms of the difference to our budget, and we'll have a section on the budget, we really don't assume very much from microtransit there. And so if you were to...
So not a huge
difference. You wouldn't. So I think really the way to think about fares is that the demand management tool. So if the fare is free, then you would have a lot more people wanting it. That may be a great thing. But it means that we'll need more vehicles, more drivers. So I think my take of it is what's the fare within people's ability to pay that sort of translates to people using it when they need it. And not necessarily falling out of the thing. That's a very complicated thing to evaluate, but you're there. Your decision is not ours. In a way, it's because it's not a technical decision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
One point I do just want to make, and Director Early, you alluded to it in your comments, is that in a place where we have fixed route service, like in Woodlands, we don't want microtransit to be the same cost or less expensive
than the fixed route service, because then we're encouraging people to take microtransit over fixed route, when actually it's much more cost effective for us to have them take fixed route if fixed route works for their trip. So we wouldn't want a situation, for example, here in Woodland, where we would have the microtransit be less expensive than the fixed route. Fixed route is $2 a trip for local service. So, but in a place like Nice Landing or Winters, they don't have local, they don't have fixed route service, right? It's their only option. So I think that is an important distinction that you're making.
You want to weigh in?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, a couple quick things. One, so I appreciate the suggestions around, first of all, I think that all of us who are going to be successful, right? That's the whole point. So I think the suggestions around potentially sort of making adjustments from the fees or anything from the fare itself, rather, I think before we sort of make those changes tonight, I think we would need to see sort of like some hard numbers run, an estimate of what, how much, because I think, yes, there's some amount of income that will come in from fares themselves, but I think reality with what we're doing, we're going to have a more in-depth discussion on it later, it has to do with the fact that we're using federal grant dollars right now to sort of pop up the agency, and we can use them faster or we can use them slower. And so based on the amount of what the fares are ultimately set at, whether it's the microtransit service or the fixed route service, I think that is, we have a policy call in for us, so we'll figure that out, I think, as we have, again, additional discussions tonight, talking about our budget, the preliminary budget. I think a couple other items. One, some questions as it relates to just the staff report. One, page 31 of the overall packet, which is sort of page 3 of 12 of the proposed. Sorry, I'm curious about the rider identification item. I mean, I think, do we require ID to be shown to ride YOLO bus, just regular YOLO bus? I think the answer is no. I mean, I don't think we require an ID to ride YOLO bus.
We don't require it, but it is, I believe we have it in our policy that riders should be able to present identification if requested.
Okay.
For at least our paratransit service. And it is also currently the policy for our microtransit service, but I do not believe it is the policy
for that particular service. So, I mean, I have a question about that, just sort of why that, why, I mean, I guess it's for verification purposes that they are able to receive the reduced fare or what, I'm not for sure.
From a policy perspective, I think there's a couple different things going on. One is you want to make sure, especially for these longer trips that people have booked in advance, that you've got the right person.
Okay.
And then to the extent that there is, there could also be some, in situations we see, for example, youth ride free on our system,
yes.
Right? So are you 18 or are you 21, right? There may be situations where a driver suspects abuse, for example.
Okay.
And so this policy gives them a latitude to do that. But I also think it's intended for situations like that, but I can understand the concern about this seeming it looks overly punitive, if you will.
Okay, yeah, I asked Michael, do drivers, are they typically asking folks for ID, or is that, one out of 10 occurrence? I'm just curious,
On fixed route, very seldom.
Okay.
They look at the rider, if they're a student, they say they are, then they usually take it for that, unless, there is time. We had just recently, someone said, I'm a student. He says, I'm 17 years old, and they questioned because he looked like he was 30 years old.
Yeah.
That was just recent. They do ask if it comes up, but otherwise it's not just a regular practice.
Okay.
It's just taken as to what they're being told.
Okay. Great.
On the picture officer.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. So just one item that I have to sort of offer potential issue and concern. And I appreciate the discussion about that. I can understand the, some aspect of it, but I still find it to be, if we don't do it on our fixed route service, or typically, it's mostly just either on the paratransit price or on the microtransit, it seems, I think consistency would be good across the board, so I'm not, and I don't know, I should be curious about what other agencies do, in terms of their, sort of asking folks for identification to direct public transit, so that's just a question that I have. The other item is on page 36 of the packet, is sort of page 8 of 12 of the proposal, which is just the issues around personal belongings. We certainly know that a lot of the folks taking the Your Ride service from Nice Landing or going to Woodland to do errands and do shopping. So the notion that, I think, at least for the policy, that every all carry on item must fit in a 100-mile orbit of the seat. I mean, I know people that have would bring the carts on to, you know, doing shopping in the limbs, for example. So that's one issue, just in terms of the other side. I didn't want to have huge amounts of, you know, items, but that's a question I have. And the other one I'll just say is, I mean, the issue around, I get the no food and drinks as it relates to open containers, like no active eating or drinking on the bus, but I think the concept about no food and drinks at all, like, I mean, people do shopping, and so I think that there's got to be just a minor clarification around, you know, no active eating or drinking is probably the way to go, as opposed to the sort of prohibition on no food or drinks that are containerized or whatever. And I think we're probably an easy way to get at that. But and then the last item is just, I'm actually to the issues around the Winters service, you know, appreciate the explanation for Director Lauren about the hours and the, you know, hours of operation because of sort of the distance to and from Winters versus Knights Landing to Woodland. So I appreciate that distinction. But my question is, when I'm on the main Yolo Bus website, you know, the 220C route was discontinued during COVID, right, which was a sort of Davis to Winters and also ultimately the Vacaville. And it says on here, you know, that people wishing to travel between Winters and Davis or Vacaville may be able to use Yolo PD's Your Ride MicroTrend service. So I think, unless I'm mistaken, I want to just clarify it, we are proposing to not only allow the MicroTrend service in Winters to be used in Winters. Is that correct? We're not still allowing it to go to Vacaville and or...
That's correct. We do still allow it to go to Vacaville and Davis.
Okay. Yeah. I apologize. I guess that... it didn't seem clear. So anyway, I'm glad to hear that, because that's definitely, I think a lot of people are probably going to want to use that. So you realize that service in Winters going to the shopping or something to help kind of back or also or the, you know, the different service Davis as well. So appreciate that. Thank you.
Just along those lines, when we have that fixed route that it sounds like our MicroTransit is subbing for, right? So let me say, Did we have abbreviated hours or shorter hours for that fixed ride because of, again, just distance?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thought was for both, for Winters I rode the 220 for a while when I lived in Winters for a minute. It was only like every 2 hours, you know, it was only a handful of runs, and the thought was, you know, per day, it was like 5 trips per day or something, and the thought was, well, you know, for having one driver that's just running back and forth on this very limited schedule, you could just have the same driver with a smaller vehicle just available to have trips on demand. And it's more or less the same cost because it's the driver that is really the biggest portion of the cost. And so I think the thought was that it just creates more flexibility to use those resources more efficiently. And similarly for Knights Landing, I think we had service like not even every day to Knights Landing, or maybe it was one trip a day. I don't know. It's before my time.
Might as well.
and that cost was the same as our normal, so was it $2 a ride, or?
Right, so, well, let's see, those would have been, I'm not sure, I think would have been our intercity fare, which is at $2.25.
Okay, yeah.
And just one quick clarification, I apologize, I missed the, sort of, on the map, the Winters map, it does clearly state that it could go to City Limits and Davis or back about someone to apologize there, but so glad I'm assuming that's still the case.
We should probably emphasize that, yeah.
And then just the last, just following up on Director Barrett, on the policy, I just want to make sure I'm reading this right, because I could be reading it wrong. Passengers must have closed their toe shoes and be fully closed. I think it's closed toe shoes is what you're going for there, right? So do we have that same policy on our fixed rides as well? I'm a California girl, right? And once it hits 110, I'm wearing flip flops. I thought it was unusual, but I wanted to make sure I was understanding.
I think when we were coming up with the policies, we were trying to really emphasize kind of cleanliness. So that might be how the language is written in terms of like just close to the shoes, no food or drink, and just kind of thinking of how this will be a shared service that will be probably used throughout the day and have high use, and just having a standard way of people, regardless of the trip that they may be going to, and just all kind of having to abide by things that would limit the spills or potential for cleanup.
It still totally makes sense.
Yeah.
I get nervous when you start to police people quitting. So I, what's our policy on our fixed rent as far as closing them entire?
It's a good question and a great point, and I don't know the answer. So Mike, we're just calling you a lot about this operational question.
No, actually, on the fixed rent side, there's no policy. You know, usually you have to have some kind of shoe, so whether it's a flip flop, sandals, that's allowed. And it's clothes. And other than that, it's just, there's not much more than...
Well, that totally makes sense.
Yeah. That's how it is.
I am fine fully clothed these days, so it's kind of subjective.
Well, California-wise, that's expected, you know, clothing.
Are we talking Zoom or in
reality? Where possible, I think what we're sharing is where possible, it would be great actually just to match up the policies with the fixed rides versus adding to our policies here for Metro Transit.
Okay, I'm going to bring it back to the sheriff, if you all don't mind. I enjoy the colloquy here. It just helps to bring home to us the many complications involved in just about anything we do here. And I appreciate it. I would just like to say that, you know, I've always believed you crawl before you walk and you walk before you run. And we've really made some pretty major changes in the operation of logistics in the last 2 years. We've actually had taken away routes that people depended upon, small numbers, and with economic decision in favor of putting resources into routes that had the potential for major growth, principally in 42. Those are economic decisions. I really believe in the role of economics in making decisions. And I'm a little concerned about throwing out numbers here, whether it's $4 or $2. It could be $2.75, who knows. But I think we would probably need, I like scenarios. I like to know the implications of decisions. So I think probably staff, if you wouldn't mind playing with those numbers a little bit. I also feel sympathy for minimum wage people. You know, we heard from the woman who works at Burger King. And, you know, I mean, really, $8 for a round trip or even $6 for a round trip is a big hit for her. That's half an hour of her work under the new name. So, you know, I would be willing to issue a card to people who self-identify as, you know, being low poverty there, some such thing, and maybe deal with special cases. But I think we should be getting the money we can from those who are able, simply because we're subsidizing every one of these to the tune of 90% if it's $4 and even more if it's a free, at least on the basis of $40 per ride. So when I talk about walking, crawling before we walk, I know everybody wants to, I like the idea of starting earlier, I like the idea of work going later, I like the idea of Saturday, but there's cost implications to all those decisions. And my inclination is it's easier to expand service than to retract service. So I would like to see us begin with a little restraint and as we go into this. And with at the city of Woodham, we don't even understand why we're doing fixed route and point to point. But a lot of assures me there's good reasons for it. I would like to learn more about it as we go along. I mean, I've always been thinking at some point we would let fixed route go. I know we have the end of West Sacramento, so there must be a reason for keeping it as well as your very successful DS service. So anyway, I feel like there's a lot going on here and many variables, and we should be, let's just say, cautious as we approach all of this, make the best decisions we can. And I'd love to see us expanding to these other options, perhaps as we get a little experience under our belt. You know, anyway, that's basically my input. The one other thing, there isn't a one of us at this table that aren't using Uber. And it's so simple. I mean, I get in, you know, I just call up on my phone, I get in the thing. I don't have to do anything. It prompts me for the tip. Okay, it does everything. I don't know. We're a public agency. We're not the same as a private operator. But I think we should aspire to be that easy to use. I do not understand why you can't just use your MasterCard or your Visa, you know, for public transit just like anything else. Basically, the rest of the world runs on it. I was actually able to use my Visa to get on a train in Vancouver, Canada, for public train.
kind of flash at the beginning, flash at the end. That's still the amount of money that the ride costs. So I always favor simplicity. And if you have people going through a lot of hoops, I think that reduces the willingness to use. It certainly does for me.
Sure. I think the only downside, especially to the communities that we are trying to serve, is unfortunately not all of them actually have access to Visa, MasterCard, some even a bank account. So that would be the only trouble there.
I agree. We can't avoid the necessity of taking cash, but that has all kinds of complications for operations. I'm not saying no, but I would like it. If you want to expand it, you know, a lot of successful transit services appeal to everybody. You go to Metro and Washington, everybody's on the Metro. And same as with the New York subway. So I would like to think that our public transit is for every member of the public, from those with means and those with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
One more comment from Director Lauren.
I just had one other comment to clear up, and I really appreciate the robustness of the discussion. So I took a little poll of people that ride the yellow bus winners, and one of them is Campesina Mary. She takes the bus. I think she pays $2.25 from Sacramento, and she goes to Davis and then gets on the bus to Winners, and then she works in one of the farms. She's a farm worker, so she pays. Right now, that's $2.25, and then $4, and then $4, and then $2.25 to get back home. But I was trying to just kind of dial down what in the future we're not going to do that. So if she pays the $2.25, does she get a transfer then? And then she doesn't have. Then she pays what? What's the cap? I want a cap, and I want to be able to explain it to her. If I can't do it in Spanish, I will want somebody else to be able to. So. Yeah, I really just need to understand it.
Currently we have the transfer fare set up so that if you are transferring from your ride, then your transfer is through.
Okay.
If you're transferring from fixed route to your ride, then you would pay the difference in cost depending on the cost of your fare for you to fix. At this time now, that is definitely subject to change because we're looking at different fare structures that you both proposed and recommended. And so we'll have to see how that affects the current cost of our fares with the transfers for using Beeline service.
Just to clarify, when you say current, you mean the current
proposal. I mean the current
what you currently do. Currently there's no free transfer.
There would be transfer available in the future. I might have just used 1,000 extra words on that. Mm-hmm. But can we make sure that there's a transferability in place for somebody like that's low income and 60 years old and is still working in at the Campesina? You know, she's working because she has to.
Yeah, so under what we've proposed tonight, she would pay $2.25 to ride the 42. It's $2.25 right now, $2.50. $2.25. To get to Davis, she would get on the microtransit. It would be free. No, I apologize. It would be, she would have to pay the difference. She would pay 75 cents because she'd be paying the difference between the fixed route fare and the microtransit fare, which would be 75 cents. Because if we keep it at $3, that's proposed. So if she's already paid her $2.25, she would pay 75 cents to board microtransit and get the rest of the way to Winners. Now on the way back, she'd pay her $3 for the microtransit and then it would be free when she gets on the 42. So in other words, she's only paying $3 max for the trip when you combine microtransit and stuff.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay. Can I ask one thing?
Yes.
So this is something we definitely thought about in terms of the financial hardship, just with everything that's going on, the cost of living, and thinking about how that relates to microtransit service and kind of the expectations. And just so kind of I'm getting a clear sense of like how the board is feeling. Is that there needs to be kind of some equity pricing associated with certain groups beyond just kind of the senior fares that we have listed in use? Am I kind of understanding kind of based on your comments with certain implications that people may be having? Or is it more focused on the regional areas, meaning Knights Landing and Winners, setting those fares since those are areas where most people may experience financial hardship within our service area and Woodland to an extent too. And Michigan and sorry, go ahead.
Door number B. It's nice landing in Esparto, you know, it's rural, so you have all that rural need, and then they don't have the fixed route, and then the people that are going in and out are often also low income. So if there's like $2 and it's that for everyone and they don't have to prune something, I think that they would feel, you know, that would be the best way to address this.
For me, it's regional. There are no fixed routes there, and so just there's no option. And so it's unfortunate, but your option for fixed route in Woodland would be $2, $2.25. That's not even an option in those areas. And so that's the equity that I'm personally looking at, is you don't even have access to that.
Quick question, staff. Are we going to be revisiting this before final adoption?
So our proposal, based on the feedback we got from the board last month, was to actually bring this to you as an action item. However, you know, certainly, of course, we can continue that if that's the direction. But we did give you the option to approve this tonight, based on what we heard from you last night, of wanting to move this forward more quickly than the Woodland fixed route service plan. The Woodland microtransit service plan.
You've probably heard a lot of, there's been a lot of feedback that probably could be a little bit more fleshing out or work done. I just wanted one quick clarification, and I apologize, Mr. Chair, just on the, when I'm now on Yolobus's main website under the passenger rules sort of section, like that's the language that you probably need to use for the microtransit as well. Including, talking about, eating and drinking and such, right? Keep food and drinks open in sealed containers while on the bus, right? Wear appropriate clothing, footwear while on the bus. That's what we already have as our rules on fixed route services. So it would seem like the consistency across
Just
a point of clarification. So, Ms. Williams, you asked about what the kind of direction that we were thinking here in the future. Can you clarify what you were saying, that there's only exemptions or discounts in certain areas?
Well, it sounded like I was hearing a request for both applying a regional aspect to how fares are structured in addition to maybe a socioeconomic aspect that goes beyond just saying that we have our fares set at one price for general fare, and then if you're a senior, you here, and then group discount. It sounds like there's, and I just want to kind of say that back just so I'm hearing correctly what it sounds like, which is to apply for winners and Knights Landing a more regional, lower cost fare for microtransit, and then also looking at how we can get more numbers for you guys to play with in terms of coming up with the proposed fare, whether it's at $2 or $3, but more saying how much of a subsidy of, knowing it costs $40 a trip and saying, well, this is why we go with three as opposed to four. So I was kind of repeating that back because I know we discussed a lot today.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
I think we've given our staff a lot of work. You really have enough guidance at this point.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We'll work on this and plan on bringing something back to you the next day.
Pardon me?
It's really important.
I wasn't suggesting it, but there it is. We couldn't pass the slide if we're not close to it, it looks to me. There's several things that need to be fleshed out, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I think that concludes item 5.
Mm-hmm. This brings us to item 6, which is our preliminary 23-24 budget. And if I introduce the subject line.
I will just remind the board that this is a preliminary budget discussion. We want to hear it. This would be in the last item. We want to hear your feedback, and then we will be bringing this back to you for approval in June.
Okay,
so I think
it's culmination or the beginning of the culmination of my year. I just want to remind the board about the timeline. So back on April 10th, we had a discussion with the technical advisory committee on the budget, particularly to introduce the Transportation Development Act fund budget proposal.
And and May 1st, the full draft was shared with the Technical Advisory Committee and then with the Citizens Advisory Committee on May 2nd. And so today is our board's discussion on the draft. By May 30, we'd like to get, if you have comments beyond those tonight, we would really like to get them in hand by May 30, because we have to come back to you on June 12th, in the next board meeting. At that point, we would hope that we're ready to have you approve the budget. You have the option of approving it as a preliminary budget if you wanted to continue discussing, but we need to have some budget in place by July 1st that has sort of a legal authority to spend. But you have the option of approving it as preliminary or final in June. So that's our priority. I guess you could even do a special meeting after June 12th, but we'd like to avoid that unless it's necessary. So moving on to the next slide. I'm just going over really a few of the highlights. Very quick presentation, and then we can get into comments. I don't want to go into all the tables. But the total operating budget proposed here is $19.6 million. That's up about 10% from the current fiscal year. And then aside from the operating budget, there's about $2.6 million in proposed new capital and project and planning appropriations. Those are the projects that might be multi-year that you'd be approving new funding in this budget. In addition to the estimated about $3.9 million is continuing, hasn't been spent yet from prior years. And that's presented in one of the budget tables. In terms of the Transportation Development Act funding that comes through our local jurisdictions, there's about $2.9 million in transit assistance funds. That's really specifically only for transit. And then $6.2 million in local transportation funds, which are may be used for other local road needs if not needed for transit. And the combined is about $9 million in this budget for the district, which, if approved in that split, would leave about $9.2 million, slightly more, still retained by jurisdictions in this year's budget. And that's about a 3% increase for the local jurisdictions over the current fiscal year. And the way that we came up with those numbers was really to try to set it so that each jurisdiction's growth or decline would be shared between the district and that jurisdiction and the local transportation fund. The state transit assistance would all be supporting this budget, but the LTF change would be based on how STACOG has STACOG's own formulas for determining the growth rate. And there's a specific table we can talk to the HLF chief in the budget. So moving to the next slide. So here's some of the highlights from the budget. There's improved transit service proposed in the budget, which includes increasing frequency on Route 42A at B to 30 minutes all day long. And that's about a 25% service increase over our current levels. It restores the express service from South Davis to downtown Sacramento and would restore evening service in West Sacramento. That's a major portion of why the budget is increasing this year over last year other than standard sort of cost of living increase. There's the E-Line Microtransit Service that we'll be talking about more, and we've talked about a lot already, so supporting the launch of Woodland's Microtransit Service. That would actually end the current year budget for 6 months, as we talked about. We're very sorry not to have been able to start it this year, but we're budgeting it for next year. And then only one change in the staffing, and that's not an increase in FTE, but there's just an internal restructuring of splitting a deputy director position that was previously transit and planning into two separate director of planning and director of transit operations, and that's offset by the reduction of one planning position in order to have no net increase in the operating budget entities. Now, in June, we may come back to you with as Autumn mentioned, a major grant that we received at TICOG for $2 million, and there wasn't time yet to include it in this budget as part of the budget. If we include it as part of it could be approved by you separately and not part of the budget, but if we pull together here, we do expect to have two grant funded positions. So if we come back, we might show two additional positions that would be specifically funded by that grant, but that's not included yet in this version of the proposal. So going to the next slide. So in the capital and planning budget items, we have continuation and more funding going into the I-80 express planning, toll authority planning, and that is grant funded. The active transportation corridors, the transition to a zero-emission fleet, some more funding going to that, and that's really the LC cost funds toward building up our match for future bus purchases for the zero emission fleet. And also, we are in this planning budget, we're planning to replace two of our CNG buses because our buses are getting so old that in order to maintain reliable buses while we are transitioning to zero emission, we still need to have at least these two just to make sure we're keeping all our current, or the current number of buses online while we do that transition, because we can't immediately ramp up the zero emission buses that fast. And so we consider that part of the transition is to have two new buses that will keep going as we're going through the transition. And then some additional funds for the Downtown Woodlands Transit Center plan. It's the other project that is part of that capital planning budget. And so moving on to the next. So there'll also, when we come back in June, there'll be a resolution on the budget, and this is what the resolution would approve. It would approve the budget, and you can either approve it as preliminary or as final. It authorizes a 7.67% cost of living adjustment. That's the existing formula that the board approved a couple of years ago when the personnel handbook was modified, and it's based on the actual cost of living change reported by the state over from 1 April to the next date. So it's just applying that formula. It authorizes the deposit as the budget increases to keep our general reserve at a 25% level, so it authorizes the necessary deposit to the reserve to follow that policy. It would authorize the use of our local transportation funds. We may be adjusting that a little when we come back this year, and it's really more around there's some of the funds that are available for capital, but they still see a board resolution. And so it's really just a portion of those funds that may be applied towards capital expenditures that we need to approve in the budget resolution. This is unchanged from last year, but just highlighting that in terms of the budget control, it does authorize the executive director to move funds around in the approved budget, provided that the funds do not exceed the amounts authorized by the board. But meanwhile, set the calendar for presenting budget status reports, as we did today, to make sure the board is aware if there are any problems throughout the year, and that staff would be preparing a plan to address any problems if they were to occur during the year with budget. And so that's a set calendar. A new thing in this year's budget, and this is really something we've been intending to do for quite a while, and it was reinforced at our technical advisory committee, the need for it, especially since we're increasing service midway through the year. It's very important to show what that means on an annualized basis, and also the fact that we're using some one-time or sort of diminishing funding in this budget. So this is in particular to look at the table 3 in the budget. This shows that there's about a $1.4 million cost in the next year, 2024-25, annualizing the 6 months of increased service. And then we wanted to look at what other funding sources in this budget would be not available in future years. By the way, I just want to say in that table, there's a lot of caveats. For simplicity purposes, it all assumes $2023. It doesn't try to forecast inflation. It just chooses in constant dollars. And so it doesn't have all the nuance of the forecast that tries to look at individual inflation levels, revenues or expenditures.
So just to clarify, I don't think you actually said the words. This is a 5-year financial forecast.
Yeah.
And the table is on page 65 of your packet.
Yes. Good. So you'll see this shows sort of the major pieces of our budget and the fact that we need to solve for the increased cost of annualizing the service. And then it recognizes that we have some competitive grant funding in our current budget that will be going away, about $0.7 million. And we're also drawing down the rest of our special sort of stimulus funding during COVID, both the ARPA and the CARES Act funding. We've been advised by SACOG and the Fed that they'd like us to draw down our ARPA funding first. And so this proposes using that all up next year and basically drawing down the rest of our CARES Act funding in the next 2 years. And so then as that goes away, that means that what we're solving for is, you can see, it's about a $3 million, again, in 2023 dollars, in 2025, 2026, and forward. And so what this table does is it shows some proposed ways of addressing that shortfall in the future. In this scenario, we do expect to continue to have the formula funds, and we're anticipating that they will be at a level where we can backfill. These are federal formula funds for operations that give us 50% funding for most of our operations. Some of it is actually 80% for the preventive maintenance part. But that would sort of backfill for half of the loss of the ARPA and the CARES Act. We would go back to funding operations with the 50% money. We would continue to apply for competitive grants, and we would hope to get at least the level that we're operating with now of the CMAQ grants. And then there's a question as to what the rest of it. Well, we do still have some unrestricted funds that we've built up over the past year for various reasons where we haven't been able to spend all of the budget that's been approved. And we drew down some of those encoders, but we still have over 8 million of those funds. And so we want to show a measured use of those funds, sort of at a higher level than ramping down because they won't be with us forever. And then we would need other strategies to make up the rest of the gap. So this is just one scenario among many one could create. But if we were to use up our unrestricted fund balance, or at least use up, say, about, over $5.5 million of it, with a declining amount, then the other source of funds that are sort of under your control, in a sense, is the local transportation fund that's currently retained by jurisdiction. So this board can approve an increasing use of those funds. There could be other funding strategies as well, which are mentioned in the narrative. But they include something such as already transit agencies are lobbying the state for additional transit funding. And they're much higher restricted than we are, so they're sort of doing the heavy lifting for us, the BART and the MUDIs and the Los Angeles. So it's possible we may get improved state funding formulas that could improve this. And then there are other potential funding sources, such as FAERS, and in the future, once the tolling authority is created, you don't know how many years away that might be, those tolls. And, another hypothetical, one could do local funding measures for transit. But the one that's most easily available for this board is the current local transportation plan for the one so that is a very high-level view of highlights, and then open to any questions and discussion.
I think that was very clear. I truly appreciate it. I did hear a comment today at SIC on someone saying that public transit's going to be going off a funding cliff. As you look at this, of course, at the end of the COVID, which actually bonus funding because it helped us a lot. And it's, there's no relief in sight at the moment.
So one thing I want to, you're right that for many other agencies, they have already hit that cliff, or they're spending that money now, and whereas we are in better financial shape. We're also in better financial shape because we don't use all of our LTF for transit. Most of those other places do. They use 100% of it. Because we don't, we have that flexibility that we could draw it down if needed be, but that would also obviously have implications for the streets and roads budgets of the local jurisdictions here in Willow County. So it's not easy in that sense. But Leo's absolutely right that there is a very big push right now in the current budget discussions to try to have the state increase the online that goes into STA. And we would probably be a beneficiary of that, even though we're not personally working on that. But Leo touched on the transportation sales tax measure. We do have the authority under our authorizing legislation to put before the voters a transportation sales tax measure, not just for transit, but for all of the transportation needs in the county. And that revenue, would be put together with an expenditure plan, et cetera. I see that as not as a very possible option for this agency, not just to improve transit, or not just assist with stabilizing transit, but also to help us address all of our transportation needs. Counties that are so-called self-help counties that do have a transportation sales tax measure are much more competitive for state and federal dollars, most of which do require or at least encourage a local match. in order to bring in grants for all sorts of things. So I think there's a lot of reasons that this body may want to consider down the road a local transportation measure, not just because, you know, we are kind of, I always called ours, we have a, not necessarily a fiscal cliff, but it's definitely a long downhill over the next 5 years. So anyway, I say that only to provide a little bit more context on why I don't think that that is such a radical solution, but rather one that actually might solve a lot of different problems in this county.
Yeah?
Yes. Okay.
I have several questions, and so I'll just rattle them off. I can get this and talk to other folks too. So I'm new to this board, and what would be helpful for me to understand if we are talking about approving a COLA is to have a better idea over the past 2 years what salary increases have been done for staff and what the percent has been, both range and average, just to help level set what that looks like for today. And I say that only because, yes, acknowledging and seeing inflation, but also putting into the context what increases have we been doing over the years, right? So have we been keeping that would be helpful. I do want to make sure that I listen to more comments than anything, that the dollars, the way that it was presented, it sounds like we're going to draw these down. If we don't use them, they will be taken away from us. I want to be super clear about that. It's not like, hey, wouldn't it be great if we use these first? If we don't, anything now, someone's going to come and take them away. So I just think that's really, really important that we highlight that. The increased use of the 5307 formula funds, I see that for 24, 25, we save $500,000 and then the bullet increases. I'm just curious where these funds have, where have they been used previously and why they're not being used now. Again, and there's just one more question. I'm just going to write these down. The use of the unrestricted fund balance carried forward or from prior years, are these reserve funds or is it something else?
So I guess starting from the last one first, if it's easiest in mind. The unrestricted funds from prior years is, they are unrestricted in the sense that they are not grant funds or that we're required to report on. They are basically what's left in our bank account from the local transportation funds that we've received, from the fares that we've received, and the match street funds that we've received. And so we haven't actually identified a first, second, third that we're using in our budget. So it's really all of those funds that are unrestricted once they come to us. For simplicity's sake, one could think of it as local transportation funds we've taken from prior years that we built up, which we can now use to smooth the need to take more of them in future years, perhaps. And to say that we've set the other things first. But actually, no one has created a hierarchy of which funds are spent 1, 2, 3 in the course of the budget.
And just to clarify again, the exact question was, are these reserved? So it sounds like the answer would be no.
They are just, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
In terms of the 5307 funds, we have not currently used all of the, we budget for all the 5307 funds we can draw down with our budgeted expenditure. So fully, after we spend 100% funds, only half of our operational funds are covered by either 5307 for the urban areas or, we do use up our 5311 funds, which are the rural areas. We make sure we claim all that we can, but we actually have more allocated to us from prior years than we have spent so far to date. And that's why I think there's room to actually increase it as our budget increases. It is a thing. If we reduced our CARES Act, for next year we could claim a lot more of it. If we weren't claiming our 100% funds, we could be spending 5307 funds.
As I understand 5307 funds, they're given to a community that's over 50,000 populations. Is that correct?
They are formula funds, but based on population, but you need to have a local match to use them. And so part of the reason that we don't use them all or that we have the ability to access more of them is because we have been using the recovery funds, which don't require a local match. The STA funding, the transportation development fund, is our local match. So we can only draw down as many 5307 funds for operations if we have local match. So there's just some of that money we never spend.
And you're aware that West Sacramento is 53.7 tons go for the VA service.
Well, I'm trying to, I am aware that the funds that folks would like to be used here go to our VA services. I was trying to distinguish between the LPF and the 53.07, which are on two different lines, but it sounds like are interrelated.
Well, then, yeah, the 53.07 is the federal funds and the LPF is state funds.
Okay.
Yeah, but we need the LPF in order to get the 53.07.
That's why I said it sounds like they're interrelated, but there are two separate lines on this. So I'm just...
We can use any non-federal fund as match. The LPF is our primary, but we do also have payers, but again, and
So again, just to make sure I'm keeping up, and then I'll stop. LPF are the funds that right now each of our cities use for various things. It sounds like some use for roads and other things. To your point here, West Sacramento uses it for our microtransit, which is the one that we operate. You would need those funds or something like it in order to match for your 53.07 to actually see the increases from going to 500 to 2.1 million and ongoing at 2.1 million. Did I follow your budget correctly?
Yeah. The current level of 53.07 is actually about 2 million. That's the, if you look up above that gap, this is saying the additional that we would do to help support the gap. So you're rising from our current $2 million.
The gap of the 2 million is, for whatever reason, you don't actually get a yes vote on those LCF being pulled from the city. Or some other sort. Okay.
Yeah, Jonathan, this is a bit of a sore subject. West Sacramento has made its own independent decision what to do with it. It didn't come through this board. City of Davis has given theirs to Unitrans unilaterally. It didn't come through this board. So basically, that $2 million is basically mostly worth the 53.07 allocation. And if I'm not mistaken, we're looking forward to using it for the multimodal service.
Yeah.
And perhaps Michael's grant other things, but we sort of feel like we should have a right to kind of direct money that came in respect of our meeting the standard for allocation of money because our sister jurisdictions have done the same. So
I don't know that that's, we have to talk carefully about this, you know, but that's, I'm not sure that's entirely correct.
I heard a couple of different things, but I'm not sure I may have misheard. West Sacramento doesn't use any 53.07 funds. They are not eligible for the home use are. So they use LPS to pay for their new service.
Oh, I'm sorry for my understanding.
It's okay. Like you said, you have some social ones.
As you know, you're content at 50,000. Aren't you already there? Have you hit 50,000 population yet?
Oh, no. Absolutely. We've been at 57,000 for a while.
Can they expect this allocation then?
The 53% allocation comes to that. For Woodland, Davis, and West Sacramento. Mm-hmm. Davis is a little bit different because of Unitrans. But yeah.
And we actually get a portion of the Sacramento Urban UVA, Urban Zone.
That's right. Now you're right. West Sacramento is part of the larger Sacramento UVA.
And so there's a big hog process for dividing up the Sacramento UVA, or there's sort of a negotiation. And so we get about a million of the Sacramento UTA 5307 right now, as well as the Woodland 5307. And it's an interesting thing. But Davis gets its own UTA, and through a long-standing agreement, we get 150,000 of the Davis UTA as sort of a flat amount, which is supposed to be for our service.
I don't want to see any dispute over this. Facts are going to make the decision for us, but I just wanted to be aware that there is a feeling in my community that, you know, we haven't yet made a powerful partner, so to speak, as we see our sister city did at least in Davis. I thought it was with West Sacramento as well. But why don't we just set that aside for now?
Yeah. Additional questions? You had a bunch of questions. Did you
answer? No. You answered all of them except for the And I know you know, but it's on your face, but you know.
No, no, I said no. I'm trying to think like the coma. Yeah,
I mean, coma in the current year, again, the current year coma was the first one done on that formula. So
and what I actually specifically asked was, what have been the salary increases over the past 2 years, both the range and the average salary increases, just to be able to put into context what would be reasonable this year, right? Like, I don't take, similar to how you do projections and you take them on historical information, I think it's important to put it into context.
Sure. And the average salary is sort of a funny thing because we have, we have a different suite of people and positions, so we could present it as it is, but
I would assume that there's been not only an increase, not only in the current salary, but also I would think the range as well, because I'm seeing that there's a request here to increase the range as well.
Well, that's what the form, in terms of what the formula does, according to the handbook, there was really, there's been two significant increases. One was with this year's budget using the formula. And so that was, again, based on the COLA for the prior year, it was 4%. And then prior to that, there was, and Autumn would know more of the history, there's a long period of time where there had been basically no...
Do you want me to jump in?
Yeah.
You want to.
Okay. Yeah.
So in December of 2021, which is about 3 months after I came on board, the board both adopted new personnel policies that established this new framework for how salary adjustments were done with a cost of living increase at the discretion of the board based on this kind of formula that's April to April. And then also merit-based increases based on annual performance review. So that was all approved in December 2021 to go forward. We've done one round of that. And so April 17th, as we have said, about 4%. And then the performance reviews happened also last summer, and based on that, I would say the overwhelming majority of staff got that 4% increase. So those happened last year. At the same time, the board took that action in December 2021. They also implemented a compensation study, the first one that had been done in I don't know how long, a very long time. And that found that most of our staff were actually not only, they were below the bottom of the range of comparable positions in the Sacramento region. And so the board authorized about $100,000 to basically bring everybody to at least the bottom of the range for those who were not already. Some people were already above the bottom of the range. And so that brought all of the long-term staff up to the bottom of the range. And that averaged about 7%, I want to say. Now, we've had a fair amount of turnover since that time, and we have new staff that have come in the last year, or really in the last 2 years since that time, that because it's a much tighter, you know, more competitive labor market, folks came in more at the middle of the range, right, in order to fill positions, right? We were not able to get anybody in here at that level. So those increases that you're talking about, or that you asked about, those are the increases that have applied to everybody who's been here in the last 2 years. And then for new staff, the new staff that have been here in the last year have not had any, you know, staff salary increases. I hope that answers your question. Sorry, Captain, that's a question.
No, I'm just curious. Like, I don't know. I mean, is this something historically have you, as this board, even this board set up a subcommittee or some kind of a group to, I mean, 7.67 obviously is a pretty big jump. I think anyone that, in jurisdictions who are dealing with any sort of negotiations in the world that we're living in right now are experiencing very similar conversations back home. I just don't know if that needs to be drawn out and discussed here this evening about what we're trying to paint, you know, pigeonhole in terms of numbers. So, I mean, how do we, in the bylaws it says, right, if I'm right, that there's, it's not set at that April to April number that the board has the ability to go back and look at. Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know if that's something that we could look at and look at salaries, look at the COLA and make a suggestion coming back if that's something that we would be interested in doing. If unless people think that the 7.67 number is where we want to be sold. So
I will say, I think when the board approved that policy, it was certainly before inflation had done what it has done.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I think we were looking at interest rates that were much more typical of historical trends, I think, when the board approved that policy. So certainly can understand the desire to kind of take a closer look at that, given what's been happening in the economy in the last 18 months.
Yeah. I think that was a very appropriate comment, and I appreciate your making it, Josh. The action we're asked to consider tonight is to consider adoption of the budget at the public hearing at the next scheduled board meeting on June 12, 2023. I think we've identified a few things we wanted clarification. We've gotten some of that clarification. There may be more that could be forthcoming. So perhaps... Yes.
I like Director Chapman's suggestion on either a subcommittee or something. I am used to these conversations actually happening either in closed session or at an executive level. And so the idea that maybe a subcommittee could have these discussions, work more closely with staff to come up with something that would be in line and more reasonable would be helpful.
I think that's an outstanding suggestion. Your suggestion that we adopt this idea.
Yeah.
You know, frankly, as we've never put a percentage like that out in a public discussion before negotiations. So I think we ought to do that. Do you have a thought?
I just wanted to put, I think something else that might be relevant for the board. As mentioned in the forward calendar, we are commissioning a compensation study. And so we were hoping to have that available by September, which would document and put before the board a comparison to other jurisdictions and allow for making sure that our staff are placed in appropriate. And we were hoping that the board, so in terms of setting staff expectations, there really is a range of issues here. It is important, particularly for staff who are longer term and came replaced in the bottom of a range after a compensation study, even though they had been here for some time. There's a sense of there was something that was... So there really are different circumstances. I think the availability of the new compensation study will be really helpful in this process. And if there was a chance that the compensation recommended by that study can be retroactive to July 1st, even if it occurs afterwards.
All of that's possible negotiations. Right. I really think that should be a bargaining table, not a corporate table, frankly.
And to be clear, we don't have a bargaining table.
Right. Yeah.
Not an official.
On the driver's side, yes, with our operator, but not one of the staff.
Yeah. I understand that. You know, my feeling is all you really need to do is present us the number of the costs on compensation, and that's our budget, basically, and we can work it out.
Just to be clear, so we had a compensation study done in 2021, and now we're doing another compensation study in 2023.
Yes.
Again, I just want to make sure
your question. Okay, so just for context, that was done internally by the staff, by our former director of finance, before I started. And
which is all you have to do is change the remark. I'm not sure it was reliable.
Thank you.
I have one quick comment in regards to the whole budget item. And I appreciated Director Early's comments earlier about the issues around ARP dollars, especially. Deadlines are, excuse me, CARES Act dollars, I'm sure, similar. But certainly with ARP, I mean, yes, like, let's not afford them, let's use them as they're for certainly. But also, they are, you know, need to be encumbered by the December 31st, 2024, and then spent by 2026. So we do have a bit of time. I mean, it's not like keep saving them, but, you know, encumbering them over the course of the next
basically a year and a half to, you know, almost two full calendar years, like it, you know, gives a little bit of a reserve, thankfully. So, but I also understand, and I'm not sure what the CARES Act deadlines are, but clearly, thankfully, there's a little bit of buffer in there. But again, and, you know, not maybe we want to make sure to use those dollars first, but as opposed to just wait through the 2026 frame to spend them all. So.
Okay, Bob, when I spoke with our FDA contact last week, you're right about the ARPA. They don't actually have to be sent right away next year, but the CARES Act, they haven't actually established a drop-dead date for using them yet. They always could in the future,
right.
But it surprised me. I kept saying, when do we have to send these by? And at least, according to our contact with the FDA, it's, well, we haven't really established the final.
Thank you. Does that conclude your presentation?
Yes.
And colleagues, it's been a robust discussion.
Again, no questions coming.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, we need public comments on this.
Yeah, sorry. We got kind of carried away for a bit. Fair suggestion. Tim, wish to comment on our budget? Our proposed budget. Owen? All right. Well, staff will be bringing that back in June, and we'll have a public hearing at that time. And
just point of clarification, was there a motion to establish a subcommittee or a point member of that committee to work with staff on this?
Director Early moved to establish a subcommittee around the salary study.
All right. I'll second. All right, we have a motion and a second to have a board subcommittee dealing with compensation issues. We'll leave it simply that simply stated.
Well, so in terms of point of process, would the board also do appoint the people as part of the motion?
Yes.
Yes.
We're
going to
do an ad hoc.
So
we want to go ahead and
do it. Do I hear volunteers wish to serve on that subcommittee?
Yeah, I'm happy to have dollars.
I will too.
Okay. Then Director Early and Director Ferris on to serve on that committee. We'll incorporate that in the motion that they would be appointed at this time. This would be ad hoc.
Yeah.
This committee would basically have a maximum life of 1 year at this point.
Exactly. It probably will not be that long, but I think we'll have a better idea once we get into salary study and things. I've heard it's starting to be done in September. So it's certainly no longer than 1 year.
All right. So they will, the understanding is they will study the issue. I think it's important whenever I'm on a JPA or a district to be aware of what's happening in my own city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're always concerned, you know, about precedent, and that's one of the reasons why we feel this has to be dealt with sensitively,
mm-hmm.
sometimes in confidence. All right, is the motion understood by everyone? Is it approved by council?
Yes.
You're ready for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Yay.
You're opposed? Okay.
I'm just hearing my vote.
Okay, so 4-1 vote. He didn't speak here to opposition.
Okay.
All right. We'll accept the loyal opposition. 4-1. All right. Turning to the agenda, which is where we are now. Okay, item number 7 is the Woodland Microservice Active Transit Service Plan. And,
so maybe just to start us off with a drop of context. We already talked about the microtransit service policies. That's for all of our service, right, including our existing service. This is about the future Woodland service. And once again, we're not asking for your vote tonight. We're asking for your input tonight, and then we're taking it to the Woodland City Council and then bringing it back to you for a vote in June.
Yeah. All right. We'll go to the next slide. And start pulling this water on me to cool that. So kind of as Autumn was saying, was that for the past 6 months, I'll kind of carry on. DOTD staff have been working, doing outreach and working with City of Woodland staff to identify needs and priorities that would help be suitable for implementing a microtransit service for City of Woodland. Within that, we've taken feedback from City of Woodland staff and from the public and have come up with 3 alternatives that we are proposing now, like as Autumn said, for your viewers to look at. These are by no means final, but we felt that they covered some of the concerns that we heard in regards to costs, in regards to areas in which to operate service for market transit, and then the number of vehicles that will be used. And so with that, and incorporating the fact that we will be using RideCo as our kind of system for implementing microtransit service,
I'll go to the next slide and kind of go over each of the proposals and like why we have them. So for starters, we have our what is called the preferred alternative. This will be one, this has the most, just at a high level, this has the most hours of service, the most vehicles in operation at peak. It has the most total hours that will be operated, and it has the highest estimated cost, also with the lowest average wait time of 10 to 15 minutes. And then with the factories of what Ryko used on their end and the service area map that we've given them, they've kind of provided us an estimate of ridership Monday through Thursday, or for all 7 days, but specifically Monday through Thursday, 185 to 230 riders, Friday, 225 to 280 riders per day, Saturday, 100 to 125 rides per day, and then Sunday, 80 to 110. Based on our earlier discussions, what we had in regards to fares, some of the things that I can do just to kind of provide more context before when we meet again is be able to kind of have a better dollar per cost for the riders in regards to each alternative. So we don't have that currently with what's presented, but that is something I can provide you guys for the next time. And so with that, I guess before going into each alternative, I'll kind of leave it open if you guys want to kind of highlight certain sections. But obviously with the preferred, it's going to be the most expensive, but it's going to offer the best in terms of service throughout the weekdays and with nights going until 11 p.m. on both Friday and Saturday. And so, if there's no questions, I'm just trying to go.
Okay.
And when you say preferred alternative, that's the staff here, not the staff in the city of Woodland.
Correct. We're talking about in terms of the quality of service going from both hours in operation, and then each subsequent proposal just has a decline in service hours or in the vehicles that are operating. So we can go ahead to the next one. So for this alternative, we have to put it to the cost constraint. It comes in at a total annual cost of under $1 million. We have service hours that are about 9,000 as opposed to the preferred alternative, which is 12,000. And then in addition with performance, you're going to have a slightly longer wait time of 20 to 30 minutes. And then with a bigger decline in terms of estimated ridership Monday through Sunday. And so again, based on what the feedback we have received, it was instead of saying, here's the one idea that we have proposed, we have heard comments in terms of costs associated with operation of service. So being mindful with that, giving is just different options. And so we'll go to the next slide, that was the last one. So this is the third alternative. This would be the most fiscally conservative, not the most fiscally conservative. This change specifically goes from an increase from three vehicles from the cost constraint to four, but it still has less hours than the preferred alternative. It is a slightly reduced cost of under $1 million when compared to the preferred alternative. And the differences between alternative three and the preferred is that it has a slightly higher, in addition, it has a slightly higher average wait time of about 15 to 20 minutes, and then slightly lower ridership estimates based on what we received from Ryko. It still offers 7 to 11 service Friday and Saturday, but has reduced service Monday through Thursday going up to 6 p.m. And then on Sunday, it has reduced service again starting at 8 and then ending at 6 p.m. So really, this is a way for us to kind of play with some of the numbers in terms of trying to see how we can maximize service frequency throughout the week, also incorporating costs, and then giving customers, you know, a very comparative service in terms of wait time, and what we expect in terms of riders to use microtransit on roughly a daily basis, and the capacity that we could support with them. And so just providing some comments from our advisory group. We'll go to the next slide. So within the proposal, we also have two area maps that we're proposing for the City of Woodland. Zone map option one includes the entire area within the City of Woodland, and then if we go to the next slide, we have our next option, which is Zone Map 2. The difference being that it takes out that industrial section, but still both Zone Map options are what we're kind of pitching in terms of areas of the locations in which passengers within the City of Woodland would be able to get picked up and dropped off. And so, let me kind of touch on the kind of...
So if you go back to the previous map, Zone Map number one, which is the entire City of Woodland,
what you see is the kind of the northeast quadrant of the city, kind of everything to the north and east of I-5. The little white bubbles are key destinations that we know are trip generators. You know, it's grocery stores, schools, job centers, hospitals, et cetera. There's not a lot of them out there. It's a fairly low-density industrial area. And so the thought is, you know, with the second option is by kind of taking that out, at least initially for the launch, what you would have is you'd have, you know, those vehicles staying in a smaller service area, which means they're not traveling as far, so they're more available for more trips, carrying more people within the kind of urban core, if you will, of Woodland. You know, we always could have the potential to expand out there, but, you know, the land use depth out in that area is not very conducive, frankly, to transit. The one exception, or the one thing that has come up in, you know, the CAC brought it up at their meeting last week and has come up is the Fourth and Hope facility, which is out on this very, very edge of town, the kind of the most northeast corner of the town, about as far out as you can get, would be excluded from this area if we were to go with option two, where we excluded the industrial area. That really is being the kind of the one major destination that we've heard that people maybe trying to access with this service.
I want to mention that they have two vans and make regular runs with their vans. Both of them provided and parked by the city of Woodland. I'm only concerned about people getting to work. You know, that's our major job center.
So I think you did have one more slide.
Oh, wait. What that major job center?
The northeast, that's where the industrial area is. People work there.
Yeah.
And so we'll go to the next slide, one after this one, maybe. And so this is just some of the feedback that we received from both the advisory committee and city staff that kind of helped develop these three alternatives that we're kind of talking about today. And so just at a high level for the city of Woodland, they were very curious about the long-term physical sustainability of implementing microtransit service, considering the cost. Even the lowest alternative was about $700,000. And when you look at that over a period of time, there's still some unknowns that we aren't sure in terms of, you know, how will this be taken with riders in public? How high will demand be? Will there be a need for more? And so they just wanted to make sure that in terms of how they're looking at their budget, having an idea of if the demand does increase to a point where we need to use more funds, that we're just in communication with them and that there might be like some further discussions that need to be had. And so with that in mind, that's kind of what helped fuel the three alternatives. So we weren't just saying that microtransit is only at one cost and kind of take your lead. The other comment that we had was that they were supportive of the preferred alternative, but like I said, they would want to revisit after the implementation of microtransit over at least the next few months, and then maybe going into future discussions with the budget if that needs to like have some more conversation. But they were supportive of at least what YOLO-TD is trying to do and with specifically the preferred alternative. With the Citizens Advisory Committee, within that, they all voted unanimously kind of with the preferred alternative. They felt that if we were to support microtransit, it's better to do it wholeheartedly and really put their backing behind it. And so with that, they really want support of the also the preferred alternative. And I believe that concludes the last slide So again, in terms of next steps, so this is just kind of the timeline that I wanted to put to remind from where we started to where we are now, and kind of Autumn brought it up in the beginning. So after this, we have the three proposals for further. We have presented the three alternatives for you. So we'll be meeting with the City of Woodland at their City Council meeting to also go over this. We'll be incorporating the feedback from you guys in preparation for our meeting in June. And then with that, we hope that you would adopt, based on the discussions that we've had, one of the three alternatives. And then we're looking that we'll have the vehicles before August and to potentially implement service within August. We also need to make sure that, you know, we'll have the driver's vehicles as well. But those are the tentative kind of timelines for what we're looking at in terms of implementation for Woodland Micro.
Is that August to September objective based on any feedback we've gotten from the manufacturers?
Yes, I mean, yes. But the date keeps flipping out, but we actually have, I think Daniel and Chad are heading down there next week to go look at those vehicles, four of the eight vehicles, and install some equipment. So those four we were feeling pretty confident about. We hope to have eight vehicles to launch the service, but I don't think we yet have a confirmation on when the other four are going to be delivered. So as I kind of alluded to earlier, it may be a partial rollout depending on vehicle and driver availability.
Okay, we have some questions from our board, please.
I have a few. I wanted to make sure I was following the map correctly. So does our microtransit here, and I'll call it ours because it's the LGD, does it take you to outward of the, for instance, DM will drop you off a mile or so from your home, right? It's not at your, like around your home. Is that exactly what this microtransit is doing as well?
It's more than that, actually.
Are you talking about the geographic boundaries or how close it gets you to your destination?
How close it gets you, because I saw lots of bubbles throughout there, and I'm just wanting to make sure that I'm in the chain. It's not just the bubbles that are called out, right? It's
door to door.
Perfect. I just wanted to make sure I was following that. The other question I had was just I was wanting to make sure I understood from Woodland's perspective. The city of Woodland is not, right now this is a pilot program, right, and they're not being asked to set aside or contribute any dollars to this. It's all coming from the big pot that is ULTD.
That's correct.
Okay, perfect. So then do you think the main concern that you're talking to Woodland City staff on just the different options that they imagine a few years from now? I think, sure, to your point, that's hard to take something away and just give it, so they want to make sure this is sustainable. I'm trying to understand the concern.
It's a concern. Yes, that is part of the concern. This is where we saw the 6-month funding of the budget, and you know, it's deceptive if you look at the budget and not realize it's going to be double that number once it's on an annual basis. So we need to understand we've got a built-in $500,000 essentially that's going to be in addition for subsequent years. And we're all very protective of the very limited funds we have in our cities to do some of the things we need to do. So that's why we're watching with some concern. We want the service. We cut back local fixed route service before you got on the board.
Mm-hmm.
There were four lines originally, and now we have two.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been economizing to be able to reprogram money to do this. And of course, this isn't, our situation is somewhat different from yours, because you're paid exclusively for your community. Ours is designed also to be able to work with both Nice Landing and Winters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's requiring a lot of discussion, because our situations are a little not necessarily equivalent, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Let's talk about a lid on this, and so I agree that we were an innovator.
And you did it really quickly, dude. You deserve a lot of credit.
Nimble but determined. Last question. So I understand. The idea that we have pushed this out so far because of just the fact that we didn't have the vehicle,
mm-hmm,
is not great, right? But understand that we have just been a victim of the market. I'm just wondering, have we thought about potential alternatives, even as much as a long-term lease for a year of vehicles or something along those lines, so that if we don't have the other four and say another 6 months. Like, what you can't just keep pushing about, particularly because I did understand before I got on here that we had taken out two fixed routes, and it can only continue to go on for so long.
So, the vehicle delay, you know, that's only the last 6 months. I mean, with the fact that the service has discontinued before I started, so it's been a long process. There was the procurement to hire RICO took, I want to say, 15 or 16 months. There's something going on in that industry where the two leaders in the industry, including the ones in West Sacramento, they challenged procurements and filed lawsuits. And so we were in the crosshairs of one of those, and so we had to make sure we did everything above and beyond with that procurement process. So it was a very protracted procurement process, but I think we had a positive outcome. We did have a fair amount of staff turnover. The lead staff for this project left June of 2022, or somewhere thereabout. So
we've had.
I'm just wondering if there's some alternatives.
I just want to be transparent about all things.
And there was multiple board conversations last summer about what to do about this vehicle situation, where we explored a number of different options. We were looking at purchasing secondhand vehicles. Part of the challenge is because of FTA requirements, we have to be very, very careful about how we procure vehicles and how those vehicles, what kinds of vehicles we're able to use.
There is no Plan B. We just Plan B is we continue to wait if, whatever reason, come September, not all these are available.
At the moment, there's no Plan B.
Okay.
Any more questions? Okay. Very good, Lauren. Okay. Sure. All right. Thank you. That concludes our discussion for tonight. It's been a long road, and eventually there'll be a bus on that road.
I have one quick comment, which is, you want to take staff to work on it.
I mean,
right, we know, sort of logistics issues that have taken place. We know there's been some staff changes as well, too, but also, some of this stuff is completely out of our hands, like, especially the inability to obtain vehicles. And we're not the only agency experiencing a similar situation, but just really want to, both on this item and that previous item, thank Courtney for his work on both items.
Thank you. I concur completely. Some of it's been easy, but most of it's been pretty hard as we try to bring this agency great distance in a short amount of time. For my colleagues' benefit, we couldn't even buy the devices we really wanted. They're not available. And there was no timeline for their becoming available. So we're buying what is available.
You with all of this stuff tonight is because, like, this is literally due ARB next month. So, we just had a convergence of major important topics tonight, and we just really appreciate all the board's input and attention to all of these important issues, as well as staff.
So, I covered this kind of in my intro, so you can go to the next slide. And so, where we're at with the timeline, so right now I'm presenting to you the draft for your OPE I presented last week to the Community Advisory Committee. Based on your input after I present and your time that we have to review, I will have this next month to incorporate any of the additional information that you guys are recommending or any questions you have regarding this document. So you'll be presenting this at June. Looking for your approval at June if everything is covered the way you guys need it. And then it will be sent off to CARC, who will then need to review it and have just an approved board resolution. And then after that,
once CARB approves, we will have that out of the park. So we're still on our timeline. I just wanted to recap that. Let me go to the next slide. So this is some of the additional information that I added just at a high level. Just, and what this is for is to really explain all the total trips that YOLO-TD has. This is across our weekend service and weekday service, and the range of miles that those trips are. And the reason why that's important is because a lot of charging above the range for electric buses is about 200 miles, 250 miles. And this is in today's current technology, meaning that we expect it to get better and the capacity and charging times to increase. So based on that today, we currently have about 5 trips that we operate based on existing service that if we somehow manage to be 100% zero emission tomorrow, that we would still need to find another way to kind of make sure that those charging times are not impacting service. So that's just informing you that from YOLO-TD, our routes are in compliance with the charging technology for zero emission buses. We can go to the next slide. So what this really, and I can talk about this too, is really explaining what CARB's requirement is to know is that we have a plan for improving our infrastructure. So YOLO-TD, we have our main headquarters maintenance facility here on site, and then we also have a backup facility at Harbor, which we use to store some of our buses when we need to kind of shorten the trips that we're having drivers who are driving to West Sacramento service. So with that, this is a very high-level proposed plan of how we plan to implement our improving our facility modifications to support zero-emission technology. What that would require is building solar canopy for this yard here and for the harbor yard, battery storage so that way we have some resiliency for if there are certain issues that arise, and knowing that how much energy that would require, that would dictate the amount of batteries we need in case of emergency. In addition to that, there are electrical infrastructure upgrades in addition for charging stations. So we have, based on the current service that we provide and the number of spaces, we would be able to use all our existing spaces within this lot to have charging stations to charge electric buses. So that is a good thing, but there's still more work to be done. This by no means solves the planning aspect that will be continuing on further. This is both to provide you guys and CARB with our estimated schedule and the components that we're looking at that would need to be upgraded at a high level for our facility. And so I just want to make that clear because while this is a planning document, this is more of a high-level planning document for CARB having a series of questions that need to be answered and not a deeper look at the engineering components and the specifications that would really explain in detail the cost of the chargers, how they'd be set up, the canopy, the stages of procurement for even getting that technology. So I just want to make that clear with like the expectations of what we're providing to CARB and the future work that will need to take place post this planning document being approved.
Also, whenever the federal government issues a mandate, all of a sudden it creates artificial demand and prices go up and delays go up. And, of course, this presumes we have enough energy being delivered to these sites, which means PG&E has to bring in more capability, and they're not easy to work with either. But we have a tough road ahead of us.
Yeah, you know, but you got to go through it. So that's kind of how I view it. There's money out there, and we've got a good team, and you just got to go through it.
So are you thinking we would start getting the charging infrastructure in place even while we work to get the rolling stock?
So I think, yes, we would, but to answer on a deeper level, we're still going to need to, we're going to have to be talking with our head of IT, who's also going to be working with understanding what are the infrastructure needs that we're going to have to go into scaling up to install chargers and how many chargers we're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
And that ties into the type of buses that we're looking to secure as well, in addition to the battery and solar. So I guess to answer your question, yes, we are planning to do both simultaneously, but we are still in the very early stages of getting to that point. Really the priority will be looking at probably an engineer that we use to design this facility and kind of go back to the table because we still have those blueprints to then say, all right, we know that we have a need to go zero emission. We know the total amount of buses we're going to procure is 48, and we know that our schedule to procure is based on the useful life of our CNG buses. So we don't need to buy everything at once. We can phase the installation of our infrastructure improvements as well. So that's what our plan will be, just to kind of at a high level explain that. Yes, we plan to kind of do both, but it'll be done in phases.
Got it.
So that way we're not constraining ourselves financially or overpromising before.
When will we see the funding to for this infrastructure?
Yeah,
I think we've got some slides on that coming.
Oh, is there more in our presentation?
Oh, yes.
So we'll go to the next slide. So this is a picture of our blueprint of the current facility here at headquarters. And it's, I have it highlighted in three sections. We have what is the yellow, which covers the administrative and bus maintenance. The red, which covers parking for buses, our bus wash, our fueling station, and parking for paratransit. And then the remaining space, which we have, is kind of like a recreational yard and where most of our buses are stored, and our second PNG facility. Mm-hmm. And so just breaking out the components to kind of see the different phases of work that will need to be completed, and then also just showing at a high level the current bus space that we have with the amount of buses that we're going to be operating at 48 moving forward. So we're going to have the space requirements. It's really going to be a matter of how are we going to re-engineer the section and how, at what steps will that be done. And highlighting it in three sections just makes it a bit easier than just looking at one image trying to pinpoint it. We can go to the next slide. This is just an aerial view. We don't have blueprints of the West Sacramento facility. This would also need to have infrastructure upgrades for charging, dispatch, as well as kind of engineering the spacing and making sure that the road is actually level. There's some, we also need to look at like kind of purchasing or agreements with City of West Sac, but just wanted to highlight these are the two locations that we're going to be prioritizing for our conversion to zero emission. Next slide. This is just a requirement from CARB explaining if we have disadvantaged communities within our service area, when would we estimate that buses would be operating in them, and do any currently operate. We do not have any zero-emission buses that currently operate. They're all tied to 138. This is just an estimate of when we think within the procurement schedule we'll start receiving some that would operate, which is currently 2026. We can go to the next slide. This is this section is one of the new sections that I added that especially explained the workforce development strategy for moving gradually being able to have the correct maintenance staff with the expertise to understand working on zero emission buses. Luckily, we have we just hired someone who has some expertise through kind of the transit contract. Although they overlook all of kind of the transit operators that are contracted with transit, we do have that person as a resource who will be able to train our maintenance staff. And we have 6 Proteras currently that he'll be assisting in terms of getting our maintenance staff up to speed on how to actually run diagnostics, troubleshoot for mechanical issues. And so roughly the plan of how we look at that is within 2023, we are beginning to start some of that preliminary training. And then as we move through 2024 and 2025, that we'll have the appropriate amount of maintenance staff to service zero-emission buses moving forward. Next slide. So now I have the list of identified funding sources. This is broken down. Green are essentially the formula-based funding sources that we can count on. The ones that aren't highlighted are discretionary, meaning ones you have to apply. I've broken this slide into three sections, so this just covers at a high level some of the federal sources. You know, the next slide. These are the state sources. Again, green highlighted for blanking formula funds. And then at the bottom, we have local funding included as what we've identified currently for funding sources to tap into. Next slide. And so some of the issues I just included within the report are challenges with service operations during extreme weather scenarios. These are just asked by CARB, so for agencies as we're planning to roll out and look for planning for zero emission vehicles and the conversion, what are some of the issues that we forecast? And so energy density and trade-off of battery capacity constraints really tied to understanding the long-term effects if we don't see improvement in charging and battery and disposal, how that'll be another factor of planning that agencies, including ours, will need to take into account. Current and future electricity costs, and then planning for long-term battery storage, Again, if energy costs continue to increase, that can directly affect our costs for fueling the vehicles, even with solar charging. So that's also why we're looking at battery storage as ways to kind of offset not being entirely exposed to market prices. And I believe this is last slide. Next slide. Oh, it's my next slide. And that kind of concludes the remaining amount of the zero emission bus plan. And that.
Courtney just threw my thought. All right. Ford, you've been very patient tonight. Is there any last word?
One quick comment on this particular presentation, actually, and just to actually on that last slide, which is, I think, one item that was sort of referenced earlier by, I think, a couple of us, but it is really important, is the issues around the inability for potential capacity expansion, right, by the utilities. I mean, like, there's all these other variables that are sort of more on YOLO bus and YOLO YTD. There's the one variable that we don't control is PG&E's ability to provide adequate amounts of infrastructure and or additional generation. I mean, that's a real challenge. We're seeing them communicate with other jurisdictions around the state that they have an inability to add additional new houses, you name it, because of infrastructure upgrades, because they don't have enough capacity. So that's a real concern. On September 10th last year, it was 116 degrees at 4 p.m., and they turned off the city of West Sacramento and the city of Davis because they didn't want there to be a blackout or brownout. Voluntarily, turned off the power in both of those two cities for the hottest day of the year, the hottest hours of the year. That's a real challenge for everything.
We'll be talking about generators and batteries.
And I really appreciate everything that the supervisor just said. I would just add that I really appreciate the climate resilience portion of getting the new CNG, because we know on those really high heat days we have to prepare problems. So I think it's well done.
And just putting the final point on it is that, like, I think you should add that to our report, right? If we're going to send a report like this to, it's required by the state of California, we should make sure the state of California knows, like, clearly our challenges, and they're not just, again, our agency challenges, they're a real challenge that many other jurisdictions are facing due to, the market not operating well or correctly.
Madam Executive Director, do you have any remaining comments for tonight?
Well, I want to make sure we get public comment on this item.
Yeah.
And I will just also add, I want to appreciate that I know the Fifth Board and the Valley Clean Energy Board share, I think, three members. So you guys are violating form at this meeting every time you're advocating. we had several of you suggested that
we can talk about this on your VCE.
Well, you may after this, because we, Corey and I, had a conversation with Mitch Spears over there about potential synergies between our need to electrify and upgrade this facility and some of the things you all are doing over there. So that's very helpful, and we're looking forward to partnering with them.
Thank you. Now, was there any public comment on this issue before we can move? All right, thank you. As our agenda serves, we are meeting again next month on June 12th, again at 6 p.m. at this location. We hope everybody has a good month in the meantime. And again, Zach, you worked really hard to put this meeting together for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For adjourned.